You know, my favorite thing about the internet is that it's 100% secure.
Wait a second, Tim. What about all my e-worms and my email viruses?
Well, Eric, you can kiss your e-virus problems goodbye, because the entire internet is located on this CD-ROM. You're not connected to anything, so no one can connect to you.
Welcome to Slurpcast, a show where Mark, myself, Baba Rob, Steve-O, Snuck415, and other guests.
I'm looking around the room. I don't see anybody. Oh, they're invisible today.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
But they are still with us, right?
Right.
In mind and mind, not body.
Yeah, maybe they're all wearing cloaking devices. So the military has secret ones here.
That's true. They do. How do they work? Or should we get the Troyster on here to describe it to us?
No, he's not Troyster. He was, what was he?
K-Dog? No, T-Dog.
T-Dog, right.
That's right.
Yeah, T-Dog believes that the military has super secret devices like that anyway.
Yeah. Well, they do, don't they?
No.
Oh.
Okay. Without it.
So we do a show once a week. We try to do it once a week, and we've lately been doing a pretty good job of doing that, where we get together and talk about the week's goings-on in tech.
And we try to relate it to old tech or old, like, thousand-year-old items if we can.
Right.
If we can think of a good analogy to something old.
Which this week, I don't have anything like that at all.
We'll come up with one as the show goes on.
Our value is that we have been in the computer industry and have some history, so our insight into what's going on is relatively interesting. You're not going to get this sort of thing and feedback and opinion.
Relatively interesting compared to a gopher or something?
Right. From any other show, which there are a plethora of for you to choose from, we're actually a unique show where we have opinions like Trump.
Right.
Yeah. And we're not afraid to share them like Trump.
We make the internet great again.
Do we?
Yeah.
Is that the internet or the internet?
Oh, that's right. What was it? Do you remember the URL?
No, we'll find it.
There's a video we'll post. If you go to the show notes at www.slurpcast.com,
yeah,
we'll post the URL for this video called the internet.
Yep.
I-N-N-E-R-N-E-T.
Yeah.
That's the latest fad in computer networking.
It's beautiful. It's better than the dark web. It's like completely virus-free.
Yeah, you can. You're totally safe on there.
Yeah.
And yet you can send messages to other people. You can have chats. You can purchase stuff.
The only thing odd about this is that when you are actually on the internet, you have to wear clothes that are from the 80s for some reason.
Right.
To use the internet.
Well, it's more, you don't have to.
Well, why do people tend to look that way?
Because based on old AOL ads, I guess.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that would have been the early 90s then.
You mean the Niners or
89er?
Yeah, when was AOL? Was it?
I
guess around that time.
It was probably later than that. Yeah, probably early Niner ADs, 90s. Yeah. Anyway, we have some fantastic stories to talk about and share our beautiful insights.
But we'll start with the regular ones first, and maybe we'll do fantastic ones later.
I see.
Yeah, I have a couple of items about how the internet's turning conversational.
Okay.
In other words, we have this concept of the UI, the user interface,
right,
of being a graphic thing where you move your mouse and type things in the fields and
right,
get pictures in certain places and all that.
Uh-huh.
But things are going back to the command line. That's actually an old item because they're not calling it that anymore. They're calling it UI-less interfaces.
Okay. There is a
trend. It's really going back to the command line is what it really is.
There's an interesting trend where at one point websites were totally complicated and complex and had really crazy things going on, and they were very, very busy, and it was totally confusing as to where the actual information you were looking for was located on the screen. And now there's this trend to go towards more simple UIs or simple designs.
Yeah. I don't even mean that, though. I'm talking about basically going back to a command line. Like Slack, for example, you're not just chatting, but you can also give commands that do different things.
Right. Well, that's sort of campfire Slack. Those are social real-time
communication. No, but that's that stuff is growing.
Okay.
Like a Facebook Messenger, you can order an Uber, although that actually does have a little bit of a UI.
Oh, I see what you mean. So you're not necessarily saying the command line. You're just saying that these tools are
starting to be more conversational.
Be more like text-based instead of...
And you give commands and fill in parameters and stuff. Which is just like the old command line.
Right. You don't click on things anymore. You're saying that we're going towards text.
Yeah.
Huh. That's
And Slack
that's
is one example. Facebook Messenger is an example. So throwing in all kinds of add-ons. You can play a chess game now on Facebook Messenger.
Which we did.
By typing commands.
Yeah. We did a little bit.
Right. Did we talk about that before?
No, we did not. It was actually something that recently.
You just go into Facebook Messenger. It's called FB Chess. Is it @FBChess?
Yes.
Then you type FB, @FBChess,
yep.
Space help. It'll give you all the commands and how you can play a game with someone over Messenger.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then, the other thing is that commerce is going the same way. Well, there's websites where instead of searching a list of products on the screen and clicking on which product you want, and then going through a dialogue to buy it, you'll do a Messenger kind of session with a store and you'll describe what you want.
Okay.
And someone will talk to you, or a robot or a person will talk to you. And you'll negotiate a sale and pay for it and everything all by a conversation.
Huh. There's certainly that level of customer support that's available for more and more online merchandise sites like, you know, Macy's. Amazon, I think, even has a like an online online presence. If you need to talk to somebody in real time, you can.
Right.
I know.
Operator is one of those, but I forget what that is. But it's one of the conversational things where you do something with companies.
Tell me?
No, Operator.
Oh, I don't know about Operator.
Yeah,
okay.
I forget what that does. But
okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Though.
Huh. Yeah, there's more and more stores that are doing the same sort of thing where if you're ordering like a ring or some jewelry and you're not sure, you need some help, there's a button you can click and it opens up a pop-up that allows you to have a conversation with somebody. But they're usually not like local. At least this one jewelry store that I had a conversation with somebody. I was actually talking to a sales rep on the floor.
Okay.
So they apparently have a machine in the back or something, and every once in a while they go back.
They weren't in India?
No, they weren't. I was afraid that I was going to get somebody in India because a lot of them are. But.
Right. I can segue off your Bluetooth item that you're going to...
Okay, I'll just go right into that then.
Yeah, okay.
I found an article on Engadget. A lot of my articles today are from Engadget about the Bluetooth Standards Group has released some information about an architectural change that gives all Bluetooth devices an internet gateway without requiring a phone, tablet, or other in-between gadget. So your internet thermostat could control temperature sensors around the house and send that information online, letting you track them from wherever you happen to be. So if I'm reading it correctly, it sounds like there's a potential firmware upgrade for everything that has a Bluetooth, probably the more recent of the Bluetooth standards, like 4.0 or the newer Bluetooth.
I don't know. The older Bluetooth chips probably don't have firmware that you can upgrade. So
yeah,
probably have to be fairly new devices.
It's probably new devices. But the idea behind this is that you could update firmware devices where the company supports it, or the product that you're using, the manufacturer supports it, that would allow that device to connect to Wi-Fi, let's say.
Because Bluetooth is very much like Wi-Fi, actually.
Right. So it kind of bridges the gap. It bridges the gap between the Bluetooth headset. And, I mean, the idea could be such that, like, your Bluetooth headset, if you're in a Wi-Fi environment, would allow you to automatically listen to Spotify without needing to go through your cell phone. You could connect over Wi-Fi through directly.
Yeah, Wi-Fi is slower, but it wouldn't matter for listening to music. But Wi-Fi has more latency. So, like, Apple has this thing called AirPlay,
right,
where you can play from your computer over to a Wi-Fi set of speakers,
okay,
instead of Bluetooth speakers. But it has about a 5-second delay in that door.
Okay.
Haven't used it for a while, but it has a very noticeable delay.
I see. Yeah, you're saying the latency. Yeah, Bluetooth is much better than for latency.
Right.
It's not so much the amount of data that it handles. It's that from the time you say start playing and you actually start triggering something, it takes a few, I guess, seconds before it actually like gets buffered and played out correctly.
Right.
Whereas Bluetooth is much faster in that sense.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Because the because the packet sizes are smaller?
I actually don't know what it is. Yeah. So if you're interested in learning more and reading this article in full, you can definitely go to the slurpcast.com site and click on the link. That show notes are the first thing you'll see when you go there.
Right.
So, and you're going to segue.
So these devices are called the Internet of Things. where you have things on the internet rather than computers on the internet.
Right.
And there's a prediction that there's going to be 34 billion of them by 2020. This article doesn't mention anything about your Bluetooth thing. It just talked about traditional Wi-Fi objects, but
so,
maybe your Bluetooth one will.
If that's true, what happened to the whole IPv6 thing?
Somehow we never run out of IPv4 addresses.
Right.
It never actually happens.
Okay.
I've seen people complain that IPv6 is slower. That's driving problems with it being slower.
Oh, really? Okay.
But nobody really ever goes to it.
A lot of access points and routers and actually do support V6, I guess.
But it's typically not turned on anywhere.
Okay.
No one's actually using it for
anything. So I guess to give a little background to people who might not know, there's a finite set of IPv4
addresses,
and we've been, like, at the rate that that IP addresses have been given out, somebody made a prediction many years ago that we were close to running out of IPv4 addresses.
People still talk about it, but partly it's just the inefficiency in how they are handed out.
Okay.
Like, the early companies that originally started the internet caught, like, a quarter of them each or something.
Okay.
So there's actually billions and billions of them still available, but companies have them in the reserve list where they have a right to keep them or sell them if they want to and stuff.
Yeah, we had talked about this before.
That's why in an emergency you could just force companies to give them up.
Okay. Yeah, probably will be a cleansing of companies that own.
IPv6 is just a much wider address field, so you can have way billions and billions of times more of them.
Yeah, it looks more like a MAC address from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's very incompatible. So all the routers in the world, every website has to change to be able to
support
accept
it.
This and stuff.
Yeah.
So things are, it's supposed to be done by now. I think by now pretty much every piece of equipment could do it.
Okay.
But no one really turns it on and forces it, so
It
doesn't really happen.
Huh. You and I were talking about this before at dinner. One of my favorite places to stream music, and as well as from an artist's perspective, I've use this service as a repository to share. Oops. I use this site called SoundCloud to share music that I've written with people in India and some other places. And it's a really widely popular way of storing music and sharing it and streaming it.
You don't use records anymore?
No, although there definitely is a subculture of folks who are doing vinyl, and even you can even make your own vinyl now.
Right.
There's a weird trend with artists who, in order to be difficult, are finding old mediums and releasing their albums only on those old mediums, like mini disc or 8-track tape even.
And some of them are only making one copy of the whole thing and selling it for millions of dollars.
That's right. Yeah. And only crazy rich, what is it?
Drug lords.
Yeah. Can afford it.
Right.
That's funny. I got this from Ars Technica. Okay. Is that SoundCloud has lost over $70 million in 2 years.
It's only money.
And the board cites material uncertainties. So, in a nutshell, they've just been burning through money. I mean, they have a subscription service. I pay a certain amount of money per year to have a fairly large amount of storage on their system. What I like about their service is that the bandwidth is always solid, like across the U.S., across the world. Mm. My friends in other countries can stream my audio anywhere, and it's the same experience. It's very clear and stable. But I pay for that, and that's what I believe I pay for when I pay to host. Mm. I don't know what I'm paying, my storage is. Billboard reported, SoundCloud was widely reported to have 175 million users globally around the end of 2014, but its average revenue per user was just 11.2 cents. By comparison, its closest rivals, Pandora and Spotify, have ARPUs of $11 and $27 respectively. So, this article basically.
Where SoundCloud charges the artist, or do they have a free level?
They have a free level.
So most of the artists are probably on the free level then?
Probably, yeah. But it's one where if you actually have a good back catalog of music, you would want to pay at least the minimal tier to store your stuff online. It's also a way to get discovered. People frequently use SoundCloud as a way to dig in the crates and find new music because it's not a commercial. It's not really a commercial site, although you know it is so popular that famous artists use it to place their music. Because you get discovered. There's people going on there, listening, you know, typing in, looking for certain types of like a genre, and they'll find artists who are quite good doing that genre who have not yet been discovered. And radio shows, I guess, movie producers and various people in the industry use SoundCloud as a way to actually like find new talent and publish that. So as a result, that trend makes new artists who are becoming popular and want to spread their music, that makes them want to join SoundCloud just because that is a known place where people go look for new music. Okay. So
they're willing to pay because of that?
I think so. I think that's true. But it sounds like SoundCloud's been burning through the money, been just burning through, like, just, I don't, my comment to you earlier was it doesn't make any sense if artists are paying $200 a year.
Probably not very many compared to the free ones.
Yeah. But even at that rate, if there's a significant amount of users, you'd think that that's still a good amount of money.
But the free one, is there any bandwidth limit or is it just a storage limit?
Just a storage, as far as I know.
So a free one could burn up a lot of bandwidth if they're popular?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you're not paying
for that. A lot of it would be bandwidth and servers and stuff like that, but it shouldn't really be that expensive.
Okay. It's not clear in the article what it is that the money's going to.
Right.
So again, go to the site and you can read these articles in more detail.
Wait, you know there's no such thing as a cloud? It's really other people's computers?
You're kidding me.
No, it's true.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought there would be a place I could go to called the cloud. When you die, you don't go to the cloud?
Oh, that? No, that's not what it is.
I was looking forward to that. I mean,
to moving into
the end of my life, I was going to go to the cloud where everything is stored.
No.
Are you saying that's not going to happen?
No.
Damn it.
Unless
I thought it was this mystical
believe.
Place where all kinds of cool computations are made.
Well, if you believe, maybe, yeah.
Once people leave the cloud?
Yeah, if you believe in the cloud, maybe it'll save you or something.
I mean, I'll be in the internet. I'll be connected on the cloud.
Wait, I had an idea. We should patent...
Uh-huh.
For you said looking through the crates of music.
Right. Digging in the crates.
Does anyone know what that means anymore?
No. Back in the old days as a DJ, digging in the crates was a term that was used. And I think people still use it today to a certain extent, where you basically are just looking for new stuff, looking for new music.
You're talking about you have a crate of records in a big box, essentially.
Yeah, well, milk crates were the common thing that DJs would use to store their vinyl albums.
So you just flip through the records in a...
Yep.
And they'll read the covers. If one looks interesting, you pull it out and turn it over and read the back and stuff like that.
Yep.
So why not do a virtual reality thing of SoundCloud where you reach out your fingers and move through things like that? You know, you could simulate that pretty well.
That's a good idea.
Virtual reality stuff.
You could, yeah. That's funny. That's an interesting way. Yeah, because a lot of the artists do have album cover art for each of the songs. So you could sort of make a big block of what look like vinyl records that you could reach out and kind of...
Yeah, then you just push a button to play it. Or
do like an Oculus Rift thing where they basically come up with a 3D virtual reality version of SoundCloud where you actually dig in the crates.
Yeah, that's what the thing is. Yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, I should companies be preparing their content for VR consumption?
I'm sure they're thinking about it, but it's a little bit too early since the devices aren't really in anyone's hands yet.
All right. Well, even the Samsung Oculus that is not really an Oculus is out. I mean, people can go get it. It's not that expensive because it uses your
Samsung
phone.
It's like Google Cardboard, but the quality is just not really that great.
Yeah. Well, that's just the limitation of the phone.
Right. And also, that's a display only. It doesn't watch your fingers. It doesn't really have any interface.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas Oculus Rift will actually have eventually touch-sensitive, motion-sensitive things you hold in your hand where you can start doing stuff like that.
Huh. Sex over the internet.
Right.
It's going to be awesome.
What?
It's going to be amazing.
What?
You thought sex was good
does
now.
Does your mother know you're talking about this?
Yes, she does, actually. She somewhat supports it. Okay, so my next article is a tribute to Bob O'Rob, who's not here right now, but if he was, he would definitely be talking about this. Einstein was right about ripples in space-time.
Apparently, he kept changing his mind. You can't really say he was right.
Okay.
Because half the time he believed that was possible, and half the time he didn't.
Okay. But he wasn't totally sure.
But by the end, he was a believer in it. Yeah.
Okay. So I got this article off of Boing Boing, and it starts out with a team of physicists who can now count themselves as astronomers announced on Thursday that they had heard and recorded the sound of two black holes colliding a billion light years away. A fleeting chirp that fulfilled the last prophecy of Einstein's great theory of relativity. That faint rising tone, physicists say, is the first direct evidence of gravitational waves, the ripples in the fabric of space-time that Einstein predicted a century ago. And you can listen to it here in the article by clicking on it. And it is a ringing, pun intended, confirmation of the nature of black holes, the bottomless gravitational pits from which not even light can escape, which were the most foreboding and welcome part of his theory. So in general, it means that when massive, massive bodies collide, they cause ripples in space-time.
Well, think of it even simpler, though. The way I like to think about it, I've never... This is my own personal idea. I've never had this confirmed by anybody, but kind of the way I can think about how this would work. Suppose you had the Earth on a stick and you wave the Earth back and forth.
This sounds like a political campaign thing, right. But go ahead.
No, you wave the whole Earth, something the size of the Earth.
Okay.
And you kind of wave it back and forth.
Okay.
Something like 100 miles away would notice the gravitational.
Oh,
it would certainly notice that the Earth was flipping back and forth, right?
Okay.
That's kind of gravity. I think of a gravity wave.
It's like water waves. It's very similar to that, they're saying.
No, but you can kind of understand that if an object is attracted to you by gravity,
yes,
and then you move, the object will notice that you moved after a while. If you move back and forth, back and forth, an object far away from you will kind of feel the gravitational influence of you shifting around all the time. So it's kind of... I think that's what a gravity wave is, something like that. Everything moving, period, would make a gravity wave, but we couldn't possibly detect it from Earth unless it was something as big as that.
Okay.
Because even though that object, the detectors they built have to watch for things the size of an atom or less than the size of an atom in motion has an effect from it.
Right. Where the whole gravity wave thing gets interesting is the space-time continuum aspect.
Right.
This whole idea about time changing based on the gravity waves.
That's just because that's the way Einstein explained gravity in the first place.
Uh-huh.
So if you have a gravity wave, gravity is moving and changing, then it's going to be time and space changing because that's the way the gravity works.
And then the joke about an article that's not the one I'm posting on the show notes about this is that we'll have gravity wave drives. We'll be able to push spaceships along by using this gravity wave idea as a way of propelling a spaceship.
It only pulls, though. It doesn't push, really.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. Again.
Anyway, this is all very new. It just came out literally today, the article. The experiments have been a few months ago, but the articles have just started coming out today.
Because I think I started reading this yesterday, actually.
Those are all rumors, though.
Oh, okay.
I think the official paper was released today, I think.
Okay.
Maybe yesterday, yeah.
Cool. Awesome. So this will...
That's our excuse for not understanding it completely.
Well, by the time you read it, a week will have gone by. But by the time you hear this podcast.
Right.
So anyway, Baba Rob would have done a better job of going over this. But, tribute to him. Hats off. And so forth and so on. Nish, do you have another one?
I can segue into something completely different.
Okay.
But the Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry.
Yep.
That's a good segue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even though I have nothing to do with him.
Speaking of space propulsion drives.
Right. Right.
Okay.
See, it's possible, see?
See, that was a good... You could have segued better, but...
But the segue is that he used to use some ancient word processing system that used floppy disks.
Okay.
And a lot of his stuff was lost, and they were able to recover his early drafts by doing forensic analysis of his old floppy disks.
Uh-huh.
They were able to get a lot of his data back and a lot of his early draft documents and stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's not that exciting.
I think I read an article about that. Who was the artist who Steve Jobs introduced the Macintosh to? He did the Campbell Soup paintings.
Oh, him.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You do.
I forget his name.
There's a good article. Maybe you talked about it in a previous show. I'm not sure. No, I think I read about it.
Andy Warhol.
Yes, Andy Warhol. Yeah. So similar thing with Andy Warhol is his old Amiga, because he eventually went on from the Mac to use other systems.
Yeah.
He had archives of art that he had done on his Amiga using some specific art program that was very proprietary and kind of rare. At the time, it was probably popular, but he had done a ton of art using this tool, using this Amiga and this program, and told nobody about it, but saved everything on discs. And his system ended up, somebody found it somewhere and was able to, I think it was MIT, extract and figure out how to get basically the machine was kind of gone, but there was some discs, and they were able to get another copy of the same Amiga that he had and actually carefully copy the discs and retrieve all the data. And they found some amazing Andy Warhol Amiga art.
But the discs were damaged, so they had to forensically recover them and stuff.
Yeah, I think that some of them were damaged.
Floppy certainly got that way.
What the article was about was more about the format of this program that was that stored the art and how unique it was and how nobody knew about it. It was like the company was gone and it had been gone for several years, so they actually had to kind of reverse engineer the format of the paint program and the files that he had stored. I think they did make images of all the discs so that they could work from the images instead of the physical discs themselves. But it was pretty interesting article about retrieving old data, and it brings up a concern that I've had, and I've talked with a bunch of people about, you know, zip drives are gone and tape backup systems are gone. It's like, you know, we're going to lose some valuable information that's stored on old media that we will forget how to access again if we don't have the ability to find ways of storing that and bringing it forward into the future. Even if we're not using it, it's going to disappear at some point.
Right. And people talk about how paper is better because we still have paper from thousands of years ago.
Right.
But not very much. The point is that the amount of data we would lose if we lost everything today is billions and billions of times more than the paper that would have been survived anyway.
So I was going to talk about that, yeah.
Now, so we're just collecting way too much, so the future probably doesn't even care about it anyway.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
How do you differentiate what's important from the gump, from the junk?
Well, if it's by Mark Bernay, then that's...
Oh.
If it's by people who are world famous like me, then that's important.
I see. Because we have to help out our future and point out what's useful and what's not.
If it's by Apple, then it's important.
Or let's not. Let's just compile and archive every single bit of binary data that we're generating.
There are people doing that. Like the Internet Archive tries to do that as much as they can.
Yeah.
If anyone's about to destroy a bunch of floppy disks, you can send it to them instead, and they'll copy it and try to figure out later on what to do with it. But they'll take any data whatsoever you send them in any format and try to save it, besides their archiving of the whole web and...
Right, because they're doing that,
yeah.
Unless it's behind a firewall or protected in some way.
They also have an archive of video games. They accept donations of any discs that have video games on them or online video games.
Okay.
And they write simulators. You can actually play. They have a huge library of video games you can play on the web.
That's cool.
Through simulators that they've written and stuff.
Yeah, my favorite game, Armor Alley, has a JavaScript simulator which simulates it really, really well. It's in a previous show note for anybody who's interested. I don't know which one it is. Can you search our site for article names?
Well, we're using Google. We can make a Google custom search. But
okay. I think you can. I think we have it set up so you could search.
Yeah.
So speaking of Wayback Machine and the Internet Archive, I found an article that's kind of interesting. Remember when MySpace was really, really popular before Facebook?
Right.
Do you remember any unique things about MySpace?
You could make your own look to it. So kids would make all kinds of bizarre looks to their...
Okay.
You know, like Facebook, everyone's profile looks exactly the same.
Right.
Except for the data. But MySpace, you could oriented yourself however you want and make pictures and make it weird colors and stuff. Yeah.
It turns out that people don't want to do that because Facebook is wildly popular.
Right.
The article I got is from Engadget called Time Inc. Buys MySpace, which is Time is Warner, right?
I think, yeah, now it is, yeah.
MySpace still exists. Crazy, right? The once monolithic social network has been fading into irrelevancy until it was relaunched with a little help from Justin Timberlake back in 2013. Okay. The fresh coat of paint wasn't enough to reinvigorate the platform, however, and it's now being sold as a part of its parent company, Viant, to Time Inc.
Okay.
Yep, that's the same Time Inc. that publishes Time, Fortune, Entertainment Weekly, and a whole bunch of other magazines. So, yeah. Is this just something that came along with the purchase of Viant? And they're like, yeah, whatever.
What else does Viant do? Because I don't even know.
I know nothing about them, yeah. It sounds like it's just one of those things. It's a freebie, and nobody really knows what to do with it.
They may spin it off. Let's buy it.
Yeah. Probably get it cheap. Could it ever be reinvigorated? I mean, you'd have to change the name to actually get people to try it, because everybody who hears
you change the name,
MySpace,
what's the point? You might as well just start something new.
Right.
Hello. What do you need them for?
Hello.
Right.
Yeah.
Peach.
Who's going to surpass Facebook? Anybody?
Trump?
I mean, no, Trump is going to surpass everyone.
When the United States is great again, the government will run a service like that.
I see. Yeah. We're gonna
and we won't let China
on. We'll vote Trump into office, and then the first day on the job, he's just not going to be there.
Right.
Because he will have, superseded us.
Right.
He'll be bored.
Yeah, go over to China and buy them too.
Right. Yeah. That's funny. Okay. So that's it for me. But again, you'll be able to go to slurpcast.com to get these wildly entertaining and just fruitful and flowery smelling articles.
Right.
Yeah. Like me.
Did we talk about Circuit City last time?
No. I don't think we did.
Yeah, whoever bought Circuit City in bankruptcy auctions and stuff is going to bring it back and open a few stores.
That's awesome. Yeah. But it's going to be too close, too similar to Best Buy.
That's probably true. Yeah.
I'm just guessing because I remember Circuit City.
Yes, I mean, I really do that well, yeah.
So it was Good Guys and Circuit City back in the day. They were two.
And they always do across the street from each other.
Yeah.
If they could.
They were competing with each other, yeah. Right. So you go into one, you try to find what you're looking for, and if you can't find it, or you find it and it's too expensive, you go into the other.
And one of them, they were both very annoying with salesmen bothering you, but one wasn't quite as annoying as the other one, so
that's one I would go to. I think that was Circuit City.
Was one less annoying?
Yeah,
I
Good
guess.
Guys was terribly annoying, if I can recall, if I'm remembering it right.
Yeah, I always want, because every single salesman in the place would come over to you in time.
You get 13, same question.
I always wonder where a note on the bounty back saying, I'm just looking, please leave me alone.
Or the first guy already asked me what you're going to ask me. Don't ask me it.
Right. I know.
I kept having to say the same thing. Anyway, that could be cool. I mean, is it gonna have an online presence? It probably will. It's probably got to, right? So it's gonna be a brick and mortar and online presence. I do have to say that when it comes to the Best Buy being one of the biggest retailers for electronics and so forth and so on, and Fry's, is that they both have terrible websites.
Yeah,
just the user experience going to their website to look for some product. It's a mess. It's like it goes against the whole principle of being simple online. And so it's just very, very weird. It's almost like their heart and soul is in the brick and mortar stores and not in the online stores.
Yeah, I've gone to Best Buy and bought things, but usually to pick up in the store.
Yeah.
I was going to have it shipped, I might as well get it from Amazon.
I get the feeling that buy online, pick up in store is kind of fake. There's something weird.
Done it.
Have you done it? Yeah. I mean, I've bought the Pebble through that, and I went and I picked it up in the store as well. But certain times, they make an attempt to give you an inventory in some cases, I think, to tell you how many is there in the store or what store has it.
Yeah, I have had that problem where I went to the store and they really couldn't find it. They didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah, it's not quite real time, I guess. There's maybe they do batch processing to update that number on the web. It's not always accurate, so bad, kind of bad experience.
But I have done it before and successfully and sometimes not.
Yeah. It's probably one of the best places to buy something and then return it.
Right.
If you don't like it. Best Buy.
in the store, although Amazon's just as good.
Okay. Yeah, Amazon's good. You can return it to them. Fry's is not so great. They always have you jump through some hurdles, and they want to give you in-store credit.
Okay.
Anyway, it's just my experience. I could be proven wrong.
I never return anything. Usually if I go to Fry's, it's just an impulse buy. I just buy stuff. I never really got around to returning them.
They're certainly that. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I go to Fry's with the intention of buying something. I don't know what, I'll have an idea on what I need. I'll go there and I'll see what it is that I need, and I will not worry about looking online to find out that what it is that I'm buying there has a better, more recent version that is available through Amazon.
That's true.
My problem.
Yeah,
even like laptops and so forth.
Right.
Touch screens. Anyway.
Touch screens?
Yeah.
How would you do on a laptop?
You remember that? Yeah. You get the touch screen.
Wouldn't that give you
monitor?
Monkey arm? What was it called?
Huh?
What was everyone predicting that? Monkey arm or something? Prediction of having to hold your arm up all the time, touch the screen.
Steve was making that comment, but you know, Microsoft is proving that not to be true.
Right.
Is like in the Surface, people tend to like the ability to reach over and touch.
But you don't use your mouse more.
I do, but there are certain things that you. Depending on what you're doing or what site you're on, you might just want to reach over and expand it.
Right.
You know, zoom in a little bit, and then zoom out with your fingers. Just there's some tactile thing there. I'm not quite sure, but definitely seems to be popular to have that as a feature.
Right.
Even if you're not going to use it, having it there is nice.
I like my shirt is more precise though. You can position exactly where you want it using a touchpad or whatever.
For that kind of stuff, trackballs. I'm a trackball person.
So. I don't like pads. Touchpads are good.
Really?
One of my Windows machines, they even have an external touchpad.
Uh-huh.
Just that I kind of like it.
Okay.
Although I really like mice better, probably.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, so go to slurpcast.com and look at the show notes, and we'll have web articles about each of the items we talk about.
Yeah, and every once in a while we give away free money, so tell your friends to join, to listen to the show, right? And we do shows in the Bay Area, so you can definitely come on by and show up.
Right. Where are we today? We're in the secret place.
Yeah. We're in the secret location.
Right.
We're in Oakland.
I am the Foursquare mayor of the secret location.
That gives them too much information. They can probably find
almost
out.
Almost does, actually. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay.